Avery noted sharp spurs jutting from metal plates girding the alien's chests, shoulders, and thighs. These would be deadly in a close-up fight, but each alien also had a stout, short-barreled weapon clipped to its belt. At first, Avery thought they carried knives as well, but then he realized the half-moon blades were affixed to the weapons like bayonets, pointed for stabbing and curved for slashing. The alien Avery decided was the leader, the one with golden armor and helmet with a V-shaped crest that swept back from its head like two jagged saw blades, carried an additional item, a long-handled hammer with a stone head that must have weighed at least as much as Byrne.
"Heavy pistols," Avery replied. "And a hammer."
"Say again?"
"A giant hammer, sir, on their leader."
Ponder let that sink in a moment, then, "Anything else?" As the gold-armored alien stepped toward the edge of the compartment, its nostrils flared. It jerked its chin toward the trees, directly at 2A's hiding spot, and its blue-armored escorts bared their oversized canine teeth, acknowledging the human scent with wary growls.
"Should have gone with barbecue," Avery muttered.
"Say again?"
"They aren't vegetarians, sir. Might want to reset the table."
There was a pause as Ponder relayed the information to Lieutenant Commander Alcigny and Governor Thune.
"No time for that, Johnson. Bring them up."
Avery wasn't privy to all of Alcigny and Thune's protocol discussions, everything they decided to do to put their alien visitors at ease. But Jalan had told him that the first freighter the aliens had attacked was carrying fruit, and that she and Thune had agreed that more produce would make a good welcome gift. Symbolically, an offering of fruits and vegetables highlighted Harvest's peaceful agrarian purpose. And this offer, to share the planet's bounty, had served as the basis for Mac's etchings. But now, looking at the aliens' carnivore physiques and vicious weapons, it was clear to Avery that they hadn't dropped to the surface hoping to find a nice fruit salad. They wanted something else, and they looked ready to take it should anyone refuse. Avery stepped toward the dropship and stopped a few meters in front of the gold-armored alien. The towering beast narrowed its yellow eyes.
"Das, come to me," Avery said. "Nice and slow."
The 1A squad leader stepped out of formation and paced to Avery's side. Moving slowly and deliberately, Avery unshouldered his BR-55, released the magazine, pulled its action to eject a lone bullet from the chamber, and presented both the weapon and its ammunition to Das. The alien's eyes flashed as it watched each step of the unloading process. Avery extended his empty hands, punctuating his performance.
"Okay," he thought. "Now you."
With a gruff exhale, the gold-armored alien grasped its hammer below the head. It slid the weapon up and over his shoulder, and then held it out to the shorter of its blue-armored escorts. The other alien seemed reluctant to take the weapon, and only did so after the leader loosed an emphatic bark. Then, mimicking Avery, it uncurled its hairy paws, revealing black and pointed nails. Avery nodded.
"Das, step back."
As the squad leader returned to formation, Avery placed a hand on his chest, then pointed at the greenhouse. Alcigny had encouraged him to keep hand gestures and their unintended insults to a minimum. But Avery had needed no convincing. He was pretty sure the aliens were already offended by what he and Byrne had done to their first ship and its crew, and he knew waving his arms and mistakenly signing the equivalent of "go screw yourself" wouldn't exactly lessen their resentment. So he kept gently placing and pointing his hand until the gold-armored alien leapt down from the compartment, shuddering the grass and sinking a good 6 inches into the turf. The militiaman standing on the other side of the ship, who had yet to see the aliens, took a nervous step back. A few looked set to bolt for the trees.
"Steady,"
Avery growled into his throat mic as the blue-armored escorts thundered to the ground. Now that all three were out in the light, Avery noticed they each had different colored fur tufting through breaks in their armor. The leader's coat was light gray, almost silver. One of the escorts had dark brown fur and the other tan. This second escort was actually a bit taller than the leader and more muscular, though Avery knew this was a bit like comparing two models of main battle tanks. One might weigh more than the other, but both would have no trouble flattening the 1A recruits. But for now, the creatures seemed eager to please. The leader placed a shaggy palm across its chest plate and pointed at Avery, then the greenhouse. Avery nodded, and soon the unlikely foursome was trooping across the lawn to a granite staircase that led up to the garden's middle tier. Avery in the lead, then the gold-armored alien, then its two escorts.
"We're on the move," Avery whispered into his mic. "So far, so good."
At the top of the stairs, a flagstone path cut east through a grove of flowering cherry and pear trees. The trees had been in bloom for weeks, and their blossoms had begun to fall onto the path's rough-cut stones. As the aliens lumbered along, the pink and yellow petals clung to their broad, bare feet, creating wider holes in an already patchy carpet. Unfortunately, the petals' scent of sweet decay did little to mask the aliens' musky smell. The powerful odor set Avery's nerves on edge, and he wondered what the Argus units would make of it.